Dad, how long will you be gone? Phil asked. I'll be back soon, Les said, although he really had no way to know. Both Phil and Catherine wrapped their arms around his waist. He held them while watching Trey finish packing a faded duffel bag on his bunk. Catherine, her head against his chest, said, You take care of Trey. Promise me that. He's not diving, don't worry, Les said. I'll dive before he does. And that's also what I'm worried about, Catherine said, pulling away. I don't want either of you diving. Why do you two have to be hell divers? You're the lieutenant of deliverance, Les. I thought Katrina said she didn't want you diving. She did, but things have changed. I'm sorry, Kate, this is my duty now. Phil sniffled and pulled her tear-streaked face away from his stomach. It's okay, sweetie, he murmured. It's gonna be okay. Ready? Trey carried his bag under the one light in their small apartment. His shaved head glistened under the glow. I want you back to celebrate your 18th birthday, Catherine said, pointing her finger at Trey, and then kissing him on the cheek. Stop worrying, Mom. I got Dad to look after me. Les smiled, but he couldn't stop thinking about the nightmare he had just woken from. In it, his son's chute didn't open on a dive, and Les was forced to watch the boy cartwheel through the darkness screaming, Dad, help me. Papa, Phil said, snapping Les out of the memory and dispelling the horrid image. Yes, sweetie. He squatted down to look in her eyes. I made something for you, she said, glancing over at Catherine, who nodded back. Phil pulled a yellow knitted figure out of her pocket and handed it to Les. It's a giraffe, she said proudly. Les held the small figure in his calloused hands. The giraffe's long neck and legs reminded him of himself. It looks kind of like the picture books, right, Papa? Phil asked. Yes, it does, baby. I love it. Thank you. Phil smiled broadly. Good job, sis, Trey said. I like it. Did you make me one, too? She wagged her head. No, but I will if you want. Yeah, I'd like that. Trey slapped his dad on the shoulder. We better go, Pops. I know. Les stood up, gave his wife and daughter another hug goodbye, and grabbed his backpack off the floor. I love you both, he said. Be good while we're gone. Bring us back something, Phil said with a broad smile. Catherine blew Les a kiss. He smiled, and he and Trey set off from their quarters on the hive toward deliverance. Dozens of people were out in the passageways, and most of them stopped to stare at the two divers. The boy seemed just as proud at that as Phil had been about her giraffe figure. He walked with his head held high. It was the first time Les had ever seen his son so proud, and while he was glad to see him happy, he worried that pride might make Trey do something stupid. He needed the boy to understand that this duty wasn't for admiration, it was for the ultimate stakes, the future of humanity. Les would not let his son become a statistic. Two militia guards stood at the span linking the hive to deliverance. Most people had to show their credentials to cross to the other ship, but Les's and Trey's uniforms gave them unquestioned access. Good luck, the two guards said almost in unison. Les led the way across the span, boots clanking on the metal. It was an odd feeling, knowing he would be separated from his wife and daughter again for an unknown length of time. The hatch closed behind them, and the militia guards on the deliverance side opened the hatch to let them board. For a few seconds, Les stood between the two airships, looking out the portholes at the darkness beyond. As soon as the hatch opened, he ducked under the overhead and stepped on to deliverance, where he slung his backpack over his shoulders. Inside were several of his favorite possessions: a water bottle, a handheld music player with connecting earbuds, his tool belt, and a science fiction book about an alien invasion. The speakers built into the overhead flared to life with a clinically calm, automated female voice. All non-critical personnel, please make your way to the hive. Deliverance will unlock in 21 minutes. Thank you. Those who hadn't already disembarked were moving away from the new wing, where hundreds of people had been relocated. Empty paint buckets and hog bristle brushes were left behind, the paint still drying on the bulkheads where children had been painting colorful murals. I don't want to leave, Mama, said Jimmy Moffat. It's okay, Jimmy, his mother replied. This is only for a little while. Many of the people carrying bags away from the open hatches were former lower deckers. Militia guards walked alongside to escort them back to the hive.
We don't want to go back there, grumbled Justin Krause. You're going to throw us out like trash again.
This is only temporary, replied one of the guards.
How do we know that? Asked a woman who had stopped in the passage, clutching a baby to her chest.
Les couldn't see her face, but he assumed it was Marla, one of the farmers. He stopped in the passage and motioned for Trey to wait.
I assure you this won't be long, Les said.
We're going to dive and bring back stuff for you guys. Don't worry, Trey added.
Les sighed under his breath. His son was eager to prove himself, but making promises like that was only going to get him in trouble.
You're probably going to die, and then we'll lose our new home, Justin muttered.
Trey stepped forward, but Les subtly put a hand on his wrist to keep his son back. The other thing the boy needed to learn was patience.
The ship will be back soon, Les said calmly. He stopped short of making any promises he might not be able to keep.
All non-critical personnel, please make your way to the hive, Timothy repeated over the comm system. Justin and the other passengers looked up at the bulkheads.
Let's go, said one of the guards, drumming his fingers against the club on his duty belt.
Justin lingered a moment while the others kept moving toward the exit. Then he followed without incident. Les watched them leave, then continued in the opposite direction until he got to the mess hall, his next stop. It was half the size of the trading post on the hive, with only 20 white plastic tables. To his surprise, one of them was completely filled with the other divers. Aaron waved at Les and Trey.
We don't have a feast tonight, but the chicken stew is still warm if you want some.
Les forced a smile.
Save me a bowl.
He looked over to Trey.
You wait here for me and get some of that food.
Okay, Dad.
Les gestured for Aaron to join him away from the others.
I thought it was just vets on this mission, he said.
She shrugged a muscular shoulder exposed by her black tank top.
Yeah, but Katrina still wants everyone here. That's why you brought Trey, right?
Les shot a glance at his son, who was already slurping down a bowl of soup.
He wanted to come, and I knew if I said no, he would just get mad.
Well, don't worry, okay?
Easy for you to say, Les said with a grin.
I've got to get to the bridge.
He hurried out of the room as the final warnings played over the comm system. The passages were mostly empty now, only a few stragglers. Militia guards were checking quarters to make sure everyone had left. Les jogged the rest of the way to the bridge and used his keycard to get in. Captain DeVita, standing at the central table with her palms on the surface, looked up.
About time, Lieutenant. Sorry, I was saying goodbye to my family.
She walked over to Dave Connor's navigation and weather station.
Report, Ensign, Katrina said.
He looked up from the monitors.
Not much wind, Captain. Out of the north-northeast at around 5 knots. Closest storm is a 40-mile front about 10 knots to the south. Barometer has dropped only slightly. I'd say we're good to go, ma'am.
She picked up a handset off the bulkhead.
Samson, this is Katrina. Skies look good. How's everything looking on your end?
I'm hot as hell and haven't taken a crap in 3 days.
Dave grinned, but Katrina didn't seem amused.
I really wish you'd reconsider this mission, Samson said. I told you, we're fine on fuel cells for another 6 months, and your leaving us means we'll have to use our turbofans to compensate.
The mission isn't about fuel cells, Samson, and you're not going to burn much power without us. We won't be gone long.
All due respect, ma'am, you don't know how long you'll be gone. Unless something's changed.
Nothing has changed, Samson. I'm still the captain, and I'm not in the mood to argue.
You put me in charge of the hive in your absence, and until you bring Pepper back online.
And?
And I'm just voicing my honest opinion, as always.
Katrina exchanged a glance with Les, who couldn't quite stifle his grin.
That's what I like and hate about you, Samson, she said.
I know, ma'am. And if I can't get you to reconsider, well, you have the green light from engineering. I'll have my teams retract the span between ships.
Good. I'll have Dr. Huff send a laxative to your quarters as a special thank you.
Samson laughed at that.
Good luck out there, Captain. May the skies be friendly for the journey and dive.
She placed the handset back on its hook and patted Connor on the back. Then she walked over to Les and whispered,
I know what you're going to say, but I don't want you diving on this mission.
Timothy gave a final warning over the comms, counting down from 1 minute.
Ma'am, I appreciate that, but I think Aaron, Michael, and Layla should have a fourth member.
Katrina played with the end of one of her braids.
I'll think about it.
Captain, this is Sergeant Sloan. My teams have cleared deliverance of all non-critical personnel. You have the all-clear to undock.
Thank you, Sergeant, Katrina said, turning to her crew.
Okay, everyone, that leaves just a handful of farmers, some engineers, us, and the divers.
Les moved over to the flight dashboard and took the program off autopilot with a punch of a button. Then he grabbed the U-shaped control yoke and prepared for the order that would separate the ships.
Do it, Katrina said.
A warning alarm sounded, filling the bridge with the wail that always came before a dive. This time, instead of proclaiming the imminent launch of humans diving to the surface, it signaled the disconnection of the two final bastions of humanity for the first time since they docked together.
Retracting beams 1 through 5, Bronson announced.
5 loud clicks resounded through the ship, and a slight vibration rocked the bridge.
Retracting beams 6 through 10.
The sound repeated, and Les slowly guided deliverance backward using the advanced thrusters under the stern.
We're away, Bronson said.
15 degrees down angle, Katrina said to Les. She took a seat in the leather captain's chair and tapped her credentials onto the screen next to her.
Come on, sweetheart, be good to me, Les thought as he watched the hive pull away.
The main monitor fired, and an image of his home came online. Les alternated his gaze from the view to his screen as he continued backing deliverance away. A violent vibration shook the airship. He held the control steady.
Slowly, Lieutenant, Katrina said.
Deliverance groaned again as it canted downward at a 15-degree angle. His eyes went back to the main screen, where a view of the hive was captured in Deliverance's frontal high beams. In the glow, he could see all the scars of the hive's 2.5 centuries in the sky. His wife and daughter were there, and though he had his son with him on Deliverance, Les still felt as if he were leaving a piece of himself behind as the ship pulled away.
Goodbye, my loves, he whispered.
11.
Pepper, you about got this floating shit can up and running yet?
X growled.
Working on it, Commander. How about the radio?
Almost there, sir.
X continued grumbling, and Magnolia, sitting in front of the control panel on the Seawolf, went back to digging through the medical pack, trying to ignore him. They were still anchored in the bay, and she was using the time to look after their injuries. Miles was already patched up, and she patted his furry head.
You're going to be just fine, boy.
The boat swayed in the rough water, and Magnolia waited for it to level out before digging back into the med pack.
Fucking engine 2 is still offline, X growled. Pepper, give me a sit rep.
Commander Rodriguez, engine 1 is operational, but I would strongly suggest not putting too much strain on it, especially with the status of our mainmast. I can't guarantee we will be able to use the mizzenmast if we need to get the sails up.
Yeah, I get it, said X. If we lose both engines, we're well and truly screwed. For now, concentrate on trying to figure out what's wrong with number 2.
We need to get that wound taken care of, Magnolia said, eyeing his arm.
She pulled out a bandage and a packet of antibacterial gel. Then she nodded at the chair beside her. X took a seat and pulled back his sleeve. The gash was puffy and inflamed, and a red streak ran up his forearm. Max sniffed the air and licked X's hand.
Thanks for getting him taken care of. And again, my apologies for being such a prick.
See, now was that so hard? Magnolia asked.
X raised his eyebrow with the scar gapping through the middle.
Apologizing, she said with a smile.
Hey, I don't hear you saying sorry or thanking me for saving you after you went ass over tea kettle off the bluff.
He gave her a scrutinizing look.
You're the one that probably needs checking out.
I'm fine.
Sure you don't want me to take a look?
She nodded, touching the welt on the top of her head. Dried blood already crusted beneath her hair.
Hold out your arm,
Gritting his teeth, he pulled the sleeve up to his elbow.
"Jeez," Magnolia said. "I've been kissed by worse things."
She chuckled at his choice of words. Placing the bandage on her lap, she opened the bottle of gel and waited for an even keel.
"This is going to sting. Want some shine?"
X shook his head.
"Nah, I'm good."
"Pepper, how about you give me another sit rep while..."
When the boat had stopped swaying, Magnolia rubbed the gel across the center of the wound. X let out a roaring curse.
"Holy shit!"
The speakers crackled, and Timothy's voice came on.
"The new radio is now working. Please advise when you want me to open a channel to deliverance. In the meantime, I'm ready to steer us out of the bay using Engine 1.
X groaned in pain, eyes wide and staring at the angry wound.
"Go ahead and get us the hell out of here," he said, "and establish connection with deliverance after that. I want Katrina to know we're back aboard the Seawolf."
"Roger that, sir. Weighing anchor now." A steady clanking sounded. Magnolia cleaned the wound with a sterile pad, wiping away the leftover gel that overflowed the wound.
"There's something I need to tell you," she said. "Something I found in the facility while you were looking for Miles."
He grabbed the armrest of his chair with his other hand and squeezed.
"I'm listening."
"Remember how I told you I got the computers back online using my extra battery?"
"Yeah."
"Well, I saw something I've never seen before. Stuff about the history of the world and how it ended."
"Who the hell cares? I don't get why you're so interested in history."
She brushed her wet hair over her ear as she waited for the gel to firm up. The boat rocked and then began to move.
"We are leaving the bay," Timothy announced.
The boat picked up speed, the slapping of waves against the side quickening in frequency.
"It's not just historical stuff," Magnolia continued. "There were maps and coordinates for places that Katrina can use."
"Katrina?"
X pulled his arm back from her grip.
"I'm not done with that yet."
She pulled his arm gently back onto the armrest to finish wrapping it. Miles looked up at X, then over to Magnolia, and finally back to the floor where he rested his muzzle.
"Yes, Katrina. I sent them everything I downloaded, including the location of a top-secret base in Cuba called Red Sphere, where they can find fuel cells, weapons, supplies, food, and boats, maybe even..."
"What?"
This time, X yanked his arm out of her grip and stood. Sweat coursed down the valley of wrinkles and scars on his forehead.
"Did you say boats?"
"Yeah. They can use them to help us when we find the metal islands."
X swore under his breath and then kicked the bottom of the dashboard, shooting her an angry glance.
"Mags, goddammit, how many times do I have to tell you I don't want their help?"
She froze in her chair, lips quivering. This was the second time she had seen him this angry, and it scared her. His temper was getting worse by the day.
"X," she said, choosing her words carefully. "I only sent them the coordinates and info on the base. I didn't tell them to go there, nor do I really want them to go there."
He smirked.
"Don't lie to me. You sent that so they would come out here and help us."
"No."
She shook her head, but deep down she realized he was right. Deep down she did want the others to come help them find the metal islands.
"I'm sorry to interrupt," Timothy said, "but something is causing drag on the boat."
X looked away from Magnolia. He cursed again and grumbled something under his breath.
"Could it be because we're using only one engine?" Magnolia asked.
X shook his head.
"No, this is something else.
Commander Rodriguez is correct. We're being obstructed by an unknown object."
"I better have a look," X said. "For now, shut it off, Pepper."
The muffled whine of the dying engine followed the order by a few seconds. X grabbed the hatch.
"I'm going topside."
"But your arm," she said. "I haven't finished."
"It can wait."
X snapped his fingers at Miles, who had stood up.
"Stay here."
The dog whined as X left. Magnolia stayed put too, but then decided to go up and check on what he was doing. By the time she got on the ladder to the top cabin, he was already suited up with armor and helmet. He grabbed his rifle with the grenade launcher and checked the ammunition.
"What are you doing?" he asked.
"Helping.
You've helped quite enough, he said. I just want to get shit done on my own now.
X, come on. Don't be like this, please.
He charged his rifle with a pull of the bolt and stepped over to the hatch. The porthole hatches were all closed, blocking the view out into the bay, but she could still hear the boom of thunder and distant keening of the birds.
Vultures, X said. Stay here.
She couldn't see his eyes behind his visor from her position, but she could tell by the position of his face shield that he was glaring at her.
Just listen to me for once, damn it, he said.
Fine, but I'm going to be ready if you need me.
She grabbed her damaged helmet off a rack and pulled it on. X hesitated, grabbed the hatch lever, and was gone, sealing the metal door behind him with a click. She stepped up and opened the hatch over the porthole window to look out. Sheets of rain pounded the boat.
It's really pissing out here, X said over the comm link.
Magnolia moved to the right for a better look, but she couldn't see much on the deck besides the smoke coughing out of the engine and battery room rising into the sky as dark as the sea below them. She didn't know much about mechanics, but the smoke definitely wasn't good. Lightning lanced astern, illuminating the crow's nest and several vultures hunting below the cloud line. One of them dived toward the waves to pluck a fish out of the water. Magnolia turned left and finally saw X. He had made his way over to the starboard rail of twisted metal and barbed wire. He continued to the stern, out of view. Magnolia strained to see, but the rain was like a curtain now.
Holy shit, X said. On second thought, you better come see this, Mags.
She grabbed her rifle off the secured rack and went outside onto the deck. The wind and rain beat against her armor as she moved, and water leaked into her helmet through the hole at the top. X was looking over the rail now and aiming his rifle behind the boat. He stepped back and gestured for her to join him near the bent harpoon gun. The rope was almost entirely uncoiled from the capstan and taut as a drawn crossbow string.
Guess we know what's causing the drag, X said with a laugh.
She stepped up next to X, her eyes widening at the sight of the shark, which was still caught on the harpoon. The boat had been dragging the dead beast behind them out of the bay. Magnolia pulled her remaining curved blade from its sheath.
Whoa, what are you doing?
X said, waving the weapon away. He got behind the harpoon gun and pushed the winch lever. A clanking sounded, and the weapon began to pull in the rope, coiling it back around its metal capstan as it drew the carcass toward the stern.
I was going to cut us loose, she said, resheathing the weapon.
Why? Don't you want to try, shark?
Deliverance pushed through the skies at an agonizingly slow speed. Michael's only clue that they were moving was the slight vibration under his boots. At this pace, they would reach their destination in less than 12 hours, assuming they didn't run into any major storms. He sat in the briefing room, a circular amphitheater with three floors overlooking a central area that featured a podium with the ITC logo. Plush seats rimmed each level. Michael sat between Layla and Aaron in the row directly below the new divers. Jaideep put his boot up on the seat next to Aaron and she swiped it away. Show some respect, she said.
Jeez, lady,
Jaideep quipped. Aaron twisted in her chair.
That's Commander, ma'am, she snapped.
Sorry, Jaideep said, sulking. Michael just shook his head. Petty bickering was the last thing they needed right now. There were a dozen things to deal with, and he still wasn't sure whether X and Magnolia were safe. The more he thought about it, the less this trip to Cuba felt like a good idea, unless Katrina knew something he didn't about what was down there. Michael finally looked behind him at the new divers. They filled only a small fraction of the seats in the big room. Sandy, Jed, Trey, Vish, Jaideep, Edgar, Ramon, Evie, and Alexander all sat in the same row, with several empty seats scattered among them. Aside from a few runs in the wind tunnels back on the hive and a few lectures in the conference room on how to dive, none of these people had any proper training, and aside from Edgar and Ramon, none of them knew how to handle a weapon either. Aside from the two militia soldiers, everyone else looked nervous as hell, and Michael could sense the tension. Sandy twisted a lock of hair. Jed whispered something to her.
The two comedians of the group, Jaideep and Vish, sat like mummies, masks of terror on their features. Evie and Alexander held hands.
All right, listen up, Les said from the bottom level.
A hologram shot out of the center console, expanding into a horizontal layered map. It showed an area of land topped by a domed building that reminded Michael of the hilltop bastion. But this facility wasn't set in the middle of the city. It was off the coast of Cuba and surrounded by ocean.
This is Red Sphere, Katrina said. 260 years ago, it was a top-secret facility owned by ITC, but run jointly with the United States Navy. Dr. Julio Diaz, a worker in the laboratory deep beneath the surface of the water, survived there for a number of years, and intel we received from his team gives us reason to believe it's worth checking out.
Checking out for what? Michael wondered. Les touched the hologram and pulled out one of the layers.
This is the DZ for Commander Everhart, Aaron, Layla, and me. We will enter the facility here and make our way to the underground warehouse and vehicle bay, he said, using his fingers to indicate the entry points.
Ensign Connor has been monitoring the weather, Katrina said, and for now it looks like landing Deliverance on the platform will present too great a risk. I was hoping we might be able to, but for now we're going to have to dive to get there.
So why are we here, Captain? Vish asked.
Katrina gave him a gaze worthy of her title.
You're here to learn and support as needed.
Edgar raised a hand.
Captain, I have a question.
Go ahead.
How long ago was the last broadcast from this Dr. Diaz?
Good question, Layla murmured.
We have multiple transmissions from Dr. Diaz and his staff starting just days after the war. The rest are spread out over several years.
What happened during that time? Michael asked.
Katrina met his eyes.
We're not exactly sure, but at some point, he and his colleagues were killed by another faction seeking shelter at Red Sphere. I'll play you the final transmission.
Les tapped the computer screen, and the map vanished, replaced by the face of Dr. Julio Diaz. His features were blue lines like computer code.
We've barricaded the laboratory, but I'm not sure how long we can hold back the defectors. They're here for my work. My life's work. And I'll die before they get hold of it.
His life's work? Layla whispered. Michael nodded.
Sounds like that's what he said.
The doctor put his hands on his head.
I'm afraid this is the end. They outnumber us and have military-grade weapons. Our flesh guns won't do much to their armor. I hope these transmissions reach someone, someday.
A banging sounded in the background of the audio, and the doctor turned to look at something over his shoulder. When he turned back toward the camera, his eyes had widened.
They're almost inside. God have mercy on our souls for what we've created.
The video fizzled out, and the lights flickered back on, spreading a glow over the amphitheater.
That was creepy as hell, Jaideep said.
Edgar whispered something to his cousin, but Ramon shrugged.
We believe the defectors were the other scientists and military officials fighting for resources, Katrina replied. But we haven't had a chance to go through all the transmissions yet.
We know that sirens didn't exist on the date of the transmissions, Les said. If this was broadcast a few years after the war, then sirens wouldn't have evolved yet. Not even close.
He's right, Layla said. Whoever killed Dr. Julio Diaz and his team were more than likely human. Sandy stopped twisting a lock of her hair between her fingers and glanced over at Jed, who again reassured her with a whisper. They had grown close, and in a way reminded Michael of him and Layla.
I agree, Katrina said, which is why I'm authorizing this mission. I have no reason to believe we will find anything but a tomb there.
Layla folded her arms across her chest.
And if we do?
Then you abandon the mission and get back into the sky, Katrina promptly replied.
I'm not risking your lives for supplies.
What are we supposed to do when they're down there? Trey asked.
Les looked up at his son. You watch and you learn, like the captain already said.
Any other questions? Katrina asked. Michael considered one, but it could wait till they were alone.
Okay, dismissed, Katrina said.
Commander Everhart and the rest of the vets, please join me for a final briefing. Michael made his way down the ramp to the bottom as the hatch closed three floors above. There's something I didn't show the others, Katrina said. She tapped the monitor again and pulled up an audio clip from Diaz.
They're inside, said the doctor. They...
A clanking came over the audio, and a mechanical noise that Michael couldn't place. Gunfire erupted, followed by multiple cries of pain. But none of them sounded quite human.
Those definitely aren't sirens, Layla said.
But they don't sound like...
Please, please don't kill us, shouted a female voice.
The reply was muffled by some sort of breathing apparatus, and the crack of gunfire ended the clip.
That's the last thing we got from the intel Magnolia sent us, Katrina said.
Michael scratched at his 5 o'clock shadow.
This happened over 260 years ago, right? Aaron asked.
Katrina nodded.
Then we should assume whoever murdered Dr. Diaz and his crew are also dead.
Assuming gets people killed, Layla replied. The speakers on the computer console crackled with a message from command.
Captain, this is Ensign Connor.
Katrina tapped the reply button.
Go ahead, Dave.
Barometer is dropping fast, and a 30-mile front is moving toward us. I'm recommending a new course to get around this monster.
How much time will it cost us? Katrina asked.
Another 12 hours, Captain, maybe more.
She exchanged a glance with Les, who nodded back.
Shit, Katrina said.
There's something else, Captain, Dave said. I've got some good news. We've re-established contact with the Sea Wolf, and X is waiting to speak with you.
Michael couldn't help but throw a fist in the air. Layla and Les both clapped, but Aaron didn't show a glimmer of emotion.
Great news, Katrina said. Tell X I'll connect with him in a few minutes.
Roger, Captain.
Whatever misgivings Michael had about this mission vanished at the news. X was out there risking his neck once again for humanity, with Magnolia by his side. The least Michael could do was check out Red Sphere with the other divers. He had been itching to dive anyway.
Cap, all due respect, but going to Cuba is a bad idea. No, it's a terrible fucking idea.
If you had any respect, you would refer to me as Captain DeVita, and you would also understand that the title gives me the right to make decisions for those under my care.
X took in a scent of unfiltered air that reeked of fish.
Same old cat, he thought.
It was definitely an improvement on her predecessor. A lot had happened in the 10 years they were apart, including her relationship with Leon Jordan and a failed pregnancy. But she was still strong, despite the trauma of having fallen in love with a madman and losing her child.
Captain, he said after a few seconds' pause, I do respect you. And I respect the lives of those in your care, which is why I'm out here looking for the Metal Islands.
Our course is set, X, so save your breath, she replied.
He licked his lips, his stomach growling at the smell coming from inside the kitchen several doors down the passage.
Is Michael with you? X asked.
He already had a feeling he knew the answer, but he needed to hear it.
Yes, he will be leading the mission to the ITC facility.
X's eyes went to the floor where Miles sat at his feet. The dog wagged his tail. There wasn't much better in life than the love of a dog, besides the love of a human. And X had always loved Tin.
I want to talk to him before he dives, X said.
I can arrange that.
She waited a few seconds before adding, Is there anything else?
I thought you wanted to talk to me.
Only to let you know our status.
And now you know ours.
X heard a slight softening in her tone. She had told him a decade earlier there was still a place for him in her heart. But was that still true? He would always care for her. But Michael came first. X had made the boy's father a promise long ago that he would look after him.
You stay safe out there, Captain, X said. And look after Michael.
Michael is more than capable of taking care of himself. Kind of like you, old man.
X grinned and licked a chipped tooth.
Who you calling old, lady?
She chuckled.
Be safe, X. I'll have Michael radio you before the dive.
Okay.
He hung up the receiver.
Come on, boy, he said. Pepper, you got the wheel.
Miles followed him out of the command center and into the passage. His stomach growled at the intoxicating scent of barbecue. It had been a while since he ate anything from the real world.
Back in the wastes, he had tried his fair share of mutant creatures, swallowing anti-rad pills after each meal. Birds and lizards had found their way onto his plate, but X had never tried fish before. He unslung his rifle and opened the hatch to the tiny galley. Magnolia turned from the grill. She had a bandage wrapped around the top of her head. A blood stain marked the top, but it didn't seem to be bothering her. His arm was feeling better already, too. The gel had taken only a few hours to work, and the infection had subsided greatly. "Have a seat," she said, gesturing toward the table. She held a pan over the grill with two generous shark steaks sizzling inside. Grabbing a pinch of packaged seasoning from the hive, she sprinkled it over the meat.
"Smells pretty good," X said.
Magnolia shrugged a shoulder.
"We'll know in a few minutes how it tastes."
He flattened his body and sat around the oval table where they ate most of their meals. Miles jumped onto the padded cushion next to him and rested his body against the bulkhead.
"You talk with the captain?" Magnolia asked.
She kept her back to him while she cooked, probably because she didn't want to look him in the eye. She knew he was upset with her for sending off the Kuba coordinates.
"Yeah."
"And?"
Magnolia flipped both steaks in the pan and added a touch of seasoning to the other side.
"They're on their way to Red Sphere, and she's planning a dive."
"Is Michael with them?"
"And Layla, and Aaron, and our long, tall friend Les."
She finally turned from the two-burner grill.
"I'm sorry, X. I didn't send that info so they would come after us."
X laced his fingers together and raised them behind his head, resting them against the bulkhead. He knew she was lying, but he was too tired and too hungry to argue.
"Okay, well, maybe I was hoping they would, but I promise I didn't."
The vessel rocked slightly, and she pulled her hand away from the grill.
"Ouch!"
Timothy's voice came over the speakers.
"Prepare for choppy seas."
"Could have used some prior warning," Magnolia grunted.
"My apologies," Timothy replied. She shook her burned hand.
"You okay?"
X asked.
"Yeah, I'm fine."
She turned back to the grill, and he touched the screen built inside the table and pulled up a map of their location. The Seawolf, running on only one engine, was slowly working south from the Turks and Caicos Islands towards Hispaniola. They had a lot of ground left to cover, and he was starting to worry about their battery power. Without the ability to use their sails, if they lost the other battery, they would be at the mercy of the seas.
"All right," Magnolia said. "Hope this is good."
She brought two plates over from the grill, each with a shark steak and a small pile of frozen greens from the farm on the hive. Miles stood on the seat and sniffed at X's plate.
"Hold on, boy. I didn't forget about you," she said, heading back to the grill.
She grabbed a bowl and brought it back to Miles, setting it down on the table in front of him. He sniffed the contents.
"What is that?"
X asked.
"Looks like cat food."
"How do you know what cat food looks like?"
"Because I ate some when I was stranded on the surface 5 years ago."
Magnolia scrunched her brows together as she took a seat at the table.
"Just kidding," he said, chuckling. "But I did find some and opened the can. One of the worst things I've ever smelled. One of them."
"You'd have to be pretty desperate to eat that."
"Or have a death wish. Botulism has killed a few people on the hive."
She cut into the shark, eyeing it suspiciously.
"And you're sure this is safe to eat?"
"I tested it for heavy metals, radiation, and other toxins. Came back okay."
Miles was already done scarfing down his bowl of mushed-up shark meat by the time X picked up his steak with his hand. He didn't bother using utensils. He swallowed a hunk. It was closer to bird than to pig, and actually had a good gamey flavor.
"Damn. Not bad at all," he said.
Magnolia tried a bite, lifting her eyes to the ceiling as if in thought.
"Yeah, it's okay."
"Nice shooting, by the way, Pepper," X said.
"Thank you, Commander."
The Seawolf swayed again, and X grabbed his plate before it could slide off the table. Miles licked his chops, already finished with his meal.
"Don't mention it, Pepper. Say, can you do something to keep this damn boat steady?"
"I'm sorry, Commander, but there are some waves ahead. I would highly recommend getting back to the command center and strapping into your seats."
Magnolia let out a sigh.
Bet you really wish you had stayed on the airships now, huh, kid?
She stabbed another bite of shark off her plate and plucked it off the fork.
Nope. I'm right where I should be, she said with a warm smile.
12. Look, I don't trust Pepper either, X said over the private comm channel. Hell, I don't trust any AI, but I do need his help, and he proved back on the island that he's here to help us.
Katrina stroked her jaw and looked over at Michael. It was just the two of them in her office, and she wanted to keep it that way for now. I shut him down in the hive after receiving the intel Magnolia sent us, X. Have you seen the videos and listened to the audio clips?
No, been kinda busy staying alive out here. The boat's in bad shape, and we're approaching another storm, so why don't you give me the short version?
Michael grinned. That's the old X I remember. I was starting to like the new one that didn't talk as much, she whispered back. The one that wasn't an asshole.
I heard that, X said, and I can confirm I am and will always be an asshole.
Katrina and Michael both chuckled. Okay, back to the issue at hand, she said.
If Pepper tries anything down here, I'll light up his holographic ass. But what you do on the hive and deliverance is your business. As you pointed out, you're the captain.
I've put Samson in charge of the hive for now, but I need to do more research on what happened in those final days leading up to the end of the world and in the blackout before I authorize turning Timothy back on.
I agree, Michael said. There are too many things that don't add up. Like why Timothy, from the Hilltop Bastion, would not know what happened with ITC and the computer virus that apparently caused this war.
Maybe because of the blackout, X replied. You guys have to remember this shit happened 260 years ago. The world ended. By whose hand or how shouldn't matter at this point.
It does matter, Katrina said.
Why's that? I've been out there. I've seen more than anyone what's left. I've seen the mass graves, the skeletons, the horror of what life has become.
His words trailed off. Katrina had a feeling he was remembering something awful.
In Flowrider, I found a mass grave of robots, he said.
You never told me that, Michael said.
Because it doesn't matter.
Katrina sighed. Maybe X is right, Michael said. Pepper may have hidden something from us, but that doesn't make him a threat. I won't take that chance on the airships, she said, standing. X, I'll let you talk to Michael since you both seem to agree. Good luck out there. I'll talk to you soon. Michael dipped his head.
Yeah, thanks, X said. Good luck with your dive, Cat.
She stepped into the passage outside her small office and closed the hatch almost all the way, torn about whether to give them privacy. She opted for eavesdropping. After all, it was a captain's prerogative.
Tim, I just want it, X began to say. I'm sorry. I mean Michael.
He stuttered out several sentences, clearly not sure what to say. X had never been good with words, especially back when she fell in love with him. But this was even worse. He had a hard time connecting with people, even with those he loved in return.
Michael, I don't like this. I told you I didn't want you guys coming after us, and there is absolutely no reason to go to Cuba right now.
I know what you said, X. But I trust Katrina. I always have. She suffered under Jordan for many years, and now she's been given a second chance. I don't think she would jeopardize our lives or the mission of saving humanity if it weren't worth it. Katrina suddenly felt guilty for listening in. She decided to give them the privacy they deserved and began to walk away. Then she heard something that made her pause.
She doesn't know what's down there, X said. No one does. No one besides me and Magnolia has been out this way and lived to tell about it.
Red Sphere is nothing but a tomb, X cut Michael off.
I'm not worried about Red Sphere or what's inside. I'm worried about what's outside. The islands are a dangerous place. Giant octopuses, armored hogs, and man-sized birds aren't the only threats. This is Cazador territory, Michael. If there's anything to learn about the end of the world, it's that humans are the real monsters. Most days I think it would have been better if whatever killed most of humankind had gone ahead and finished the job.
Les stood in the launch bay of Deliverance with Aaron, Layla, and Michael. All were suited up and ready to dive. This was the same place where they had launched the Seawolf into the ocean less than a week ago. The new recruits were all standing outside the main entrance, a large steel hatch with two portholes. Trey had pushed up to the front of the group and homed in directly on Les.
"Ah, shit," Les muttered. "I'll be right back."
Michael nodded, and Les ran over to the hatch. He opened it and pulled out the giraffe Phil had given him back on the hive.
"Hold on to this for me," Les said.
Trey shook his shaved head.
"Phil gave that to you. It'll bring you luck. You keep it."
He cupped his hand over Les's and pushed it back.
"Seriously, Dad, you hold on to it," Trey said.
"Okay." Les stuck it back into his cargo pocket and secured the Velcro.
"I love you. See you soon."
"Love you, Dad. Be safe."
"Good luck, man,"
V said, raising a hand. The other recruits all looked at Les with sad gazes, as though they thought he wasn't coming back. He raised a hand toward his son a final time, then hurried back through the launch bay. Another wide door separated the four divers from the storm swirling outside. There would be no launching from weapon tubes like those on the hive. Today, they were jumping right out of the belly of Deliverance. Michael, wearing his black suit, armor, and glowing red battery unit, stepped in front and turned to face his team. The Raptor logo, recently touched up with new paint, covered the top of his helmet. A guttural groan creaked through the ship as Deliverance lowered through the skies. After 12 hours of resting, playing cards, and helping tend the farm, the divers were finally in position over their target.
25,000 feet and dropping, Katrina said over the comm. Ensign Connor has confirmed a 45-mile storm front in the east. We have to dive before it catches up with us.
Not great news, but apparently Katrina was continuing the mission despite the storm barreling in on their location. Les watched the seconds tick down on his mission clock. His senses were on full alert, every muscle in his body preparing for the extreme forces that were about to pummel him. He could hear his heart hammering in his ears and felt the pulse in his carotid arteries. A breath of filtered air filled his lungs and seemed to mix with the flow of adrenaline already coursing through him.
10 minutes to drop.
This was only his 6th dive, and one of them wasn't even technically a dive since he had done it in a metal pod. He tried to push statistics out of his mind. He wasn't even close to 15, the average number of dives that marked a diver's lifespan. Those were the old days of diving, back when they had to take more risks. Today was risky enough, though. There was a storm over the DZ. Les brought up his wrist monitor, checked that it was working, and moved on to his HUD. 3 other dots blinked on the minimap. The other divers were all performing their last-minute checks beside him. Layla flexed her hands, making fists, and then shaking them out.
"You ready?" Michael asked her.
She nodded, and their helmets came together with a soft clack. Les turned again to look at the portholes behind him, where Trey stood watching intently.
"That was me 15 years ago, Michael said, slapping Les on the back. "I watched my dad leave many, many times. As long as we're in the air, more children will watch their fathers and mothers jump into hell," Les said.
Michael dipped his helmet and moved over to Aaron. She had a shotgun slung over her shoulder and an Uzi holstered where her blaster would otherwise be. A nod confirmed she was ready to go. Les checked the strap over his blaster, then the sling of the rifle over his back. Magazines protruded from his vest, and 2 nickel-plated 1911-style pistols were holstered on his long legs. Michael did a final scan of his team.
"Radio check. Raptor 2 online," Layla confirmed.
"Raptor 3, good to go," Aaron said.
"Raptor 4 ready," said Les.
Michael raised his wrist monitor and touched the screen.
"Systems check."
Les confirmed that his battery was at 98%. His suit integrity was 100%. He bumped his chin pad to turn on his NVGs, then bumped them off.
"Lights check," Michael said.
Reaching up, Les turned on his helmet-mounted beams.
"Raptor's good to go," Michael said.
He opened a line to command.
"All set to dive, Captain."
"Roger that. We're still moving into position," she replied. Starting mission clock in 5. A moment later, the mission clock updated in their HUDs. 2 minutes to drop. Deliverance dipped at a 30-degree angle, just enough that Les had to plant his boots to keep from sliding. Lightning slashed the black outside the porthole windows, and a boom of thunder rattled a bar in the corner of the room.
"You thinking a suicide dive right out the gate?" Layla asked.
The raptor symbol on Michael's helmet dipped in confirmation.
"The faster the better," he said. "But don't forget, this DZ's a lot smaller than anything we've tried before. You overshoot it, and you'll be swimming to Red Sphere, attached to a giant octopus trying to wrap you up and pull you into the depths."
Three blinks on the HUD display confirmed that the team understood.
"Okay, Team Raptor, let's get this done," Michael said, walking toward the doors.
A red light swirled around the long space, spreading a glow across the suited and armored divers. The hydraulics that operated the bay door clicked and parted in the middle, letting a horizontal line of blue from a lightning flash into the room. It vanished a beat later, leaving the divers in the red glow of the warning light.
"Almost there," Katrina said, her calm voice betraying no emotion. "Currently at 22,000 feet.
Les cinched down the magazines on his vest with another strap as the ship lowered. The red transitioned into a cool blue, and Les took in a long breath. The bay doors were completely open. Another bolt of lightning lit the clouds outside.
30 seconds, Katrina said, starting the countdown.
This was it. They were about to jump back into the abyss. Les looked over his shoulder one last time at the 10-second mark. The other divers were already moving toward the open door, their boots clicking on the aluminum deck.
3, 2, 1. "We dive so humanity survives," Michael yelled.
He was first off the platform, launching his body into the air and then angling down like a swimmer diving into water. Layla and Aaron jumped just after him. Les hesitated when his boots hit the liftgate. He turned and raised a hand to Trey as a terrifying possibility entered his mind.
"What if this is the last time you see your boy?"
Les blinked and then leaped into the darkness. For the first few seconds of freefall, he felt weightless, his body shattering the invisible clouds. But a beat later, the rush of wind took him. He brought his hands close to his body, forming a human arrow, trying to outfall his worries and focus on getting through this alive. The storm appeared worse to the east, but the DZ didn't look too scary, just a few random forks of lightning. It was the pockets of turbulence that had him worried. A single blast could send him way off course, maybe into the sea. He kept his eye on the glow from 2 blue battery packs and 1 red. The other divers were already a good 500 feet below him. Had he really hesitated that long before jumping? It wouldn't matter as long as he stayed on course.
"Raptor 1," Michael's voice came through a flurry of static noise. "Looks like we might have a surprise between 10,000 and 15,000 feet. I'm getting a lot of disturbance. Gonna spear right."
White noise cut his voice off, the connection already severed.
"Shit, shit, shit," Les cursed.
The words echoed in his helmet. He bit down on his mouthguard, trying to keep his heart rate and breathing under control. Another transmission came over the link from command, but Les made out only 2 words.
"Possible hidden."
Dazzling swirls of lightning flashed below, foreshadowing what lay beneath the dark clouds. The weather sensors on Deliverance were more advanced than those on the Hive, but apparently, even they hadn't been able to detect what was down there. Ensign Connor was also one of the best meteorologists in the history of the Hive, but these storms were unpredictable. Les shifted his gaze back to his HUD. He was already down to 16,000 feet, and at his current speed he would be on the ground in 4 to 7 minutes, depending on when he pulled his chute. Very long minutes, and he was still picking up speed. The wind rushed over his suit and armor, whistling, screaming like a wild animal. Les straightened his long body the best he could, his muscles tense and his spine straight. The rifle strapped over his back made it difficult, but he managed to hold his head down vertical position all the way down to 12,000 feet. His eyes went from his HUD, which now began to crackle, to the divers below. The red of Michael's battery pack at around 10,000 feet looked like a flame in the darkness. An arc of lightning streaked between the two blue units, but according to his HUD, both Layla and Aaron made it through. Their beacons beeped for several more seconds until the minimap fizzled out. He was deaf and blind now, with only his instincts and brain to keep him alive. The floor suddenly lit up like a strobe light. Dozens of lightning flashes created the illusion of an electric ocean.
My God, it's beautiful, he thought.
And deadly, he reminded himself. Les was close to terminal velocity, somewhere around 170 miles per hour. Even though his last HUD reading showed an ambient temperature of 41 degrees Fahrenheit, he was sweating. The synthetic layers under his suit were warm, and he had an extra layer of clothes on under those. His muscles tensed as he hit a pocket of turbulence. For a fleeting moment, he thought he might be able to hold the suicide dive, but the wind took him, cartwheeling his body as if it were the giraffe doll his daughter had given him. The mouthguard popped out and lay against the inside of his face shield. He flexed his arms back into a hard arch, doing what he was trained to do, fighting his way into a stable free-fall position first, then working his way back into a nosedive. A voice broke over the speakers, the system flaring back to life suddenly. Raptor 2-3-4, report! It was Michael, but Les couldn't make out the rest of the transmission. The battery units of the other divers were about to enter the heart of the storm below. One by one, they vanished into the cloud. Les was next. His altimeter put him between 6,000 and 7,000 feet, which meant the cloud cover would break soon, and they would have to pull their chutes. As he entered the nucleus of the storm, lightning flashed in all directions. The hair on his neck prickled, and he felt hot and cold at the same time. 5,000 feet. Or was he past that already? The next few seconds felt as if he were falling through some interdimensional wormhole surrounded by blue. The clouds around him seemed to swirl like a tornadic vortex. And in a blink, it was all over. He blasted through the final cloud of the storm, untouched by the lightning. The hair on his neck and arms relaxed, and he blinked as his HUD flickered back on. Now he knew why Deliverance hadn't picked up the electromagnetic disturbance. It was just a small rogue pocket, nearly undetectable by their weather sensors. Voices boomed over the channel.
We're off course!
It was Michael, and then Layla shouted,
Pull west! Pull west!
Les spotted their battery units, but he still couldn't see the ground, only a flat, black surface.
Wait, is that?
The subtly shifting clouds below weren't clouds at all. They were waves. And to the west, his left, rose a domed building set in the middle of a disc-shaped platform the color of rust. Docks extended from the circular edge, giving it the appearance of a spiked virus shell. Could this be the Metal Islands? The ITC military base was unlike anything he had ever seen. Now that he was clear of the storm, he gradually brought his arms out at right angles and spread his legs until he was in stable falling position. Then, turning and extending his legs a bit, he began to work his way toward the other three divers. Aaron was to the far right of Michael and Layla, about 2,000 feet away from Les. She must have caught some serious turbulence.
Raptor 3, Les said. She didn't respond.
Raptor 3, he repeated. After another pause, he yelled, Aaron! She continued falling headfirst in a suicide dive. Les saw then that it wasn't precisely a suicide dive. Her arms were not tucked against her sides as they should have been.
Oh no, Les mumbled.
It wasn't turbulence that had hit her. She must have been zapped by lightning in the rogue storm pocket.
Raptor 3, do you copy? Michael said.
She's been hit, Les said. I think she's been hit.
Michael wasted no time dropping into a nosedive.
Tin, what are you doing? Layla yelled.
Les knew exactly what the commander was doing, and it was a long shot. He had little to no chance of catching her and getting his canopy over them before hitting the water, and chances were that Aaron was already dead, although her beacon was still beating.
Pull your chutes,
Michael yelled at Layla and Les. Layla ignored the order. Les checked his HUD before grabbing the ripcord. Michael continued in his suicide dive. He was really going to try to save her.
You got 15 seconds, Raptor 1, Les shouted.
He checked the numbers again.
4,000 feet, and falling at 120 miles an hour.